Blog Talk Radio.
I'll go on and on and on about it. It's still a plan. Oh, hi, welcome to Eerie House Radio, that is. Come on in. Plenty of room. Pull up a chair. Bring in your snacks, whatever you do. We got a great show for you tonight. A little CBS Radio Mystery Theater. Always good stuff as we explore planets. I'm Dale Kay from Spook Show, and I'm here with...
From Out of This World, Dave Binkley for the Weirdness Really Bad Movie and Spaceship One. At least most
and
my
how appropriate. Right. How appropriate Spaceship One as we explore these planets. Now, again, I'm going to just continue ranting on and on and on. We just read an article as we were doing our show prep, okay, where they demoted Pluto because they found other small planets that were kind of, or small objects, let's say, for argument's sake, that are dwarf planets and are much more like Pluto, and they're like, oh, wow, we can't have 13 planets. We better demote Pluto.
Yeah. They called it a planetoid, but the definition of planetoid is a small body resembling a planet, especially an asteroid. But asteroids are not planets. Asteroids are not round, right?
Yes. No, not truly round. They can be oblong. They can be all kinds of shapes. According to this article, the IAU, which stands for something important, I'm sure. How about the International Astronomical Union? Has defined a planet as A, if it is in orbit around the sun, B, it has sufficient mass to assume hydrostatic equilibrium, you know, a nearly round shape, and C, it has cleared the neighborhood around its orbit, which Pluto fails at, according to these new definitions.
Hey, you know what, Dale? Under those definitions, I resemble that around the buffet table, you know? Round.
Yes.
And circle the buffet table.
Cleared out.
But
so,
yeah,
I don't know.
But tell them about that group you found. The Pluto support group you got going there.
Oh, yeah. I guess there's even a Facebook page called the Unapologetic Group of Planet. Oh, here it is. The Society of Unapologetic Pluto Huggers. I may join. I may join. There's a link. There's a link in this article. I'm hovering over it. I'm hovering.
Careful how you hover there.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, I love nature. I wouldn't call myself a tree hugger, but I could be a Pluto hugger. And I don't mean just Mickey Mouse's dog either.
No, no, no.
No, no.
No, and explain about the other, you know, I can even accept that, you know, one thing was to call it perhaps a dwarf planet. Tell them about the other, you found some other dwarf planets in our own solar system here.
Yeah, there's one that's in between Jupiter and Mars in the asteroid belt. It's called Ceres. Where's the other list of these guys? There's a bunch of them. No, there's four others whose names I have lost that are out there, like way out there, like Pluto is. In fact, somewhat farther. Here we go. Ceres is in the asteroid belt, as I mentioned, between Mars and Jupiter. Pluto, Haumea, Makemake, or perhaps it's Makemake, and Eris that are in the outer solar system, way out there. Okay, by the Kuiper
belt. I like Makemake with a little extra salt. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Did you ever have Makemake? Oh,
no,
it's dolphin.
I have not.
It's dolphin fish. It's good. It's very good.
Dolphin fish, oh. I can
yeah,
never
it's actually a
it.
Fish, but they call it a dolphin fish. It is not a mammal.
Oh.
It is not a dolphin.
Okay.
But it's called dolphin fish. Yeah.
Okay.
So we're exploring all kinds of planets. Well, almost all the planets. They're, you know, we'll go just about, you know, Dave, especially in Spaceship One, he'll go anywhere in the galaxy, except there's one place we're not going to explore, and that's the seventh planet.
We just
don't go there.
Get out your charts, kids. Yep, just get out your charts.
Yeah. Or count them out, Mercury, Venus, Earth, Mars, yada, yada, yada. We're not going to the seventh planet ever. We just don't go there. But where we do go is to CBS Radio Mystery Theater.
Yes, under our banner of a little bit of fact, a little bit of fun, a whole lot of old-time radio. Just think, we've already had some of the fact part, and it was also fun. And next up, that leaves old-time radio with another visit to E.G. Marshall and the CBS Radio Mystery Theater.
I can't express enough how sorry I am that I didn't get to experience it when it was a brand new show. But at the same time, it's increasing my enjoyment listening to these for the first time, most of them, right here with you, the listeners. Hi, Fogs. Thanks for joining us.
And, we have got a cat here reaching up. All right, surprised. it was a wonderful time listening to these, and I even caught a short time when I caught another thing that Hyman Brown was doing at the same time when he brought in for one season of the General Mills Adventure Theater. Usually it took a lot of classic stories. He used the same writers, he used the same actors, and Tom Bosley. He was the host for that. Technically, it was a half a year that they tried to find some more sponsors, and it just didn't fit. It was supported by the National Education Association, the NEA. They did endorse it. Very well done. I keep looking at some of those and say, you know, I'm going to have to bring in some of those classic stories. They've got the original Jungle Book, Mowgli, the Tale of Mowgli. They've got Moby Dick and some other wonderful tales that they have done. And it was only on Saturday and Sunday, only Saturday and Sunday. And we did have a local, I think WJW radio played those. And I think that's also who when the Sears Radio Theater turned into the Mutual Radio Theater, went to Mutual Network from CBS, I think that's also where you found that, or where I found that. Was on CBS, so.
But all you have to do is come here to Erie House to hear some great episodes. We play a wide variety of stuff, but somehow Saturdays just seem so right when we got CBS Radio Mystery Theater.
Yeah. And in keeping with our weekend of exploring planets, that's what we have again tonight. People out there exploring the universe and landing, or in this case, a particular case, perhaps crash landing on unknown planets. So the theme in so many science fiction shows, especially, you know, the one I think of some of the Twilight Zones that were like that. Going into space and the one coming down, I Shot an Arrow, where they came back and they all disappeared one by one until there were none there, and the ship even disappeared. Just classic Rod Serling and Twilight Zone. So it's just exploring other worlds and other planets is just something that I don't think we ever get tired of.
No. They even... in the mid-60s, they even modernized the Robinson Crusoe story with a movie called Robinson Crusoe on Mars with Adam West from Batman. Blah, blah. But no, tonight it's CBS Radio Mystery Theater with a tale called Stranded.
Yep. Yeah, this is... one of the complaints that people had is that the Radio Mystery Theater was too much like just the old-time radio stuff, the old stuff from the Golden Age of radio. And this tale does resemble those quite a bit more. But you know what I say? So what? I think it was darn good entertainment, acted well, written well, and well worth the time you spent with it. So what? that it, you know, they had all kinds of different robots and androids if they were doing science fiction or creatures from wherever. They even had some things. I've got one scheduled from the Bryce Bond series, who was a psychic and UFO investigator. He lent his files, had some of his files adapted to Radio Mystery Theaters. And I've got at least one of those scheduled for the future there. It's already set up for a weekend. I don't have the weekend set up yet, which whenever we air that one. But, you know, so they even have done some stories based on true incidents or true stories as well. So, you know, the CBS Radio Mystery Theater did it all, from comedy to sci-fi to horror to romance to just, you know, cheating stories to just murder mysteries. I can't think of a topic that CBS Radio Mystery Theater didn't touch at one time or other during their 9-year run.
Yep, and in this one, we have two astronauts exploring a neighboring solar system. They're struck by an asteroid and forced to land on an inhabited planet. They're greeted by an intelligent race of people who tell them that their arrival has brought the planet to near war. So that's what we're in for tonight.
There you go.
And
I guess all we can say is that this, from here on, it's episode number 1208, and it is from June 8th, 1981.
This is News Radio 78, WBBM, Chicago. The CBS Radio Mystery Theater presents... Come in. Welcome. I'm E.G. Marshall. Good speed to your youthful valor, boy. So shall you scale the stars. To scale the stars. To the great Virgil, who penned those words 2,000 years ago, it was merely a poetic metaphor in the same league with climbing the highest mountain and reaching for the moon. And although today all three phrases have become tantalizing realities, they are still deeds associated with the bravest, the noblest, and most sparkling of creatures, the explorer. Yes, they're still around, some reaching for that distant star. Of course, nobody ever tells them what to do, if and when they finally get there, and that can be downright disastrous.
You are talking about them as if they were animals.
They are animals.
They're intelligent beings.
Rubbish.
And they deserve to be treated with dignity, even respect.
You are coming dangerously close to losing your job, Doctor.
Justify it any way you want. There's only one word for what you intend to do.
And what is that?
Murder. Plain and simple murder.
Our mystery drama, Stranded, was written especially for the Mystery Theater by Victoria Dan, and stars Marion Seldes and Gordon Gould. I'll be back shortly with Act One. They are two astronauts, the best and the brightest. They have been sent out further than any manned probe has ever gone, past the farthest moon, past the most distant planet in the solar system, out beyond the loneliest outpost. For the past 3 years, they have been gathering data from their survey of the nearest star, a star with a ring of planets all its own. But now begins the most treacherous part of the mission, the journey home.
And you know the first thing I'm going to do when we get back, Terry? Take one of those long, wet showers in real water. Turn the spigot on full force and let that steam just bake right in. What are you going to do?
Oh, I haven't thought about it much.
You crazy. All I've been thinking about is that nice little reunion with my wife and my kid. Would you believe he's 4? He wasn't even walking when I left. Oh, come on, Perry. Isn't there anybody you'd be happy to see?
No, Raymond.
You should have gotten married. Just knowing that my wife is waiting for me.
I like it my way. No family, no ties.
Yeah, but 3 years out, And another three back?
I like space. I don't want to go home.
They're going to make you a general?
Yeah, yeah. And put me behind some desk. And if I want to sign up for another mission, I'll be competing with guys who are brighter and every year always younger.
Well, I've had it with space. As soon as we get back, I'm quitting.
To do what?
Make a bushel of money publishing my findings.
What findings?
The preliminary studies of this solar system. Now, I know you've logged your opinion, but I still maintain that a strong possibility exists that one or two of the inner planets contain atmospheres capable of sustaining life. Perhaps intelligent life.
Let's hear this.
What if? Just what if it's a life form even more intelligent than we are?
What? Oh. Are you picking up anything on the screen?
No. What about ultrasound?
Holy cow! A meteor swarm and closing fast.
It can't be. It would have shown up on a screen.
And the dark screen isn't working.
I just checked the circuits yesterday.
Maybe we can program a course out of this. Go to auxiliary.
What? We're right in the center of it, Terry.
Evasive maneuver. Come on, come on. Another one like that, we've had it.
It's responding.
Oh, yeah. We're clear now.
Yeah. For a minute, I thought we'd had it.
Oh, no.
What is it? What's wrong?
Just look at the signal light. It's still at code yellow.
But how bad could the damage be?
We're about to find out.
Well, how bad?
We're out of the meteor shower, all right, but not soon enough.
I don't think I like the look on your face.
That first meteor, it glanced off the hull.
And?
It ruptured the seal.
Are you sure?
Code orange. Yeah, I'm sure.
You realize what this means?
Yeah. We've got maybe 5 minutes until the pressure blows this thing apart.
How can this be happening? How can this be happening now?
Get your oxygen helmet on, Ray. This is Mega 7. I repeat, Mega 7. Abandoning main craft. We have sustained severe structural damage. Repeat, we are abandoning ship. Code red. Less than 4 minutes.
Perry, wait.
Get to the lifeboat.
Listen, please.
What the devil's the matter with you?
Just listen. There's got to be another way.
Move it!
Perry!
Get down the ladder now!
But the lifeboat hasn't got enough...
That's an order! There she goes. Blown apart like a piece of fruit.
Maybe it's a blessing there isn't any sound in outer space. At least we didn't have to hear it explode.
Yeah. It's time to talk, Ray. Our first choice is just to float free until we stretch out all the oxygen and fuel. Now, I figure that way we might be able to last 4, maybe 5 months.
I'll never see my kid. I'll never get to talk to him.
The second choice, the one I think we ought to go with, is to keep heading in the opposite direction of home. It's a long shot, I know. But heading towards some of the inner planets, utilizing the remaining fuel...
The opposite direction of home?
Forget home, Ray.
But, Terry, even if we make it to one of these planets, even if the atmosphere is livable, the chances are 1,000,000 to 1.
Those odds are a lot better than the ones we have now.
This is a lifeboat. It's not equipped for anything but docking.
Yeah. Well, that's a risk we'll have to take.
It's also not designed for heavy landing.
So what's the alternative?
If the re-entry doesn't kill us, the impact will.
We'll die anyway.
Yeah. I suppose we will at that.
Ray? Ray, are you awake?
Strange. I must have drifted off for a minute.
Don't you remember? You took a sleep pill.
Did I?
Uses up less oxygen that way.
How long?
Oh, 8, maybe 9 hours.
Oh, no. How long have we been in here? How long since The accident.
Don't you remember?
No.
3 months, 1 day, 7 hours, and 42 minutes.
It's the air, isn't it? That's why my mind is so slow.
It's down as thin as we can stand it.
I never wanted to die in space. I always figured I'd die in bed at a ripe old age. Did I ever tell you about the old tri-level house we bought by the lake?
Wait. Can you see it?
What?
Look how close we are now.
Is that the planet? The one can't be more than 1,000,000 miles away.
What do you think?
It's very small, isn't it?
We'll have just enough fuel to make it into their atmosphere.
Well, we'll burn up like a match.
Oh, you know, I'm a little fed up with your negative attitude.
We're going to die. That's a fact.
If you say that one more time.
Up here, down there, what's the difference?
Wait, please, just try to hang on a little longer. Don't crack up on me.
I'm scared, Perry. I can't help myself. I'm scared.
I'm scared, too. Do you think they look like us?
Who? The creatures on that planet we're going to try to land on?
What makes you think there'll be any life there at all?
I'm a scientist. I sense these things.
Oh, come on, Ray. Go back to sleep.
Very intelligent creatures, I'll bet.
Yeah. With two heads and green hair. Go to sleep.
How long till we get there?
10 solar days. You feel better?
My head's a lot clearer, if that's what you mean.
I raised the oxygen levels. I figure in a few moments it won't make a difference one way or the other. 15 seconds to re-entry. 10 seconds.
What kind of a world is waiting for us down there?
Whatever it is, it's the only one we've got.
5 seconds.
Oh, just pray our parachute slows down a little. 2, 1.
Brace yourself. External temperature 1,000 degrees.
We're not slowing down enough. It's still too fast. We're going to hit hard. It's going to come out.
Barry? Barry?
I'm over here.
We're actually alive. We actually made it.
Ray, my leg. It's pinned under the console.
I'll get you out. Don't worry. I'll get you out. Oh!
It must be broken.
Now lean on me. Come on. Just lean on me.
We've got to get out of here. It's nothing. I can't breathe.
Help me open the hatch. Hurry. Look. Just look at this.
Such a vast open space. Miles and miles of flat open space.
It's barren.
The sky. Look at the sky. It's flame. The sun. It's on fire. It's so bright.
Have you ever seen such colors in a sunset?
The rock. Oh, over there. Help me. Help me, would you?
Yeah.
I can't stand on my feet any longer.
Here. Take it easy.
This sounds crazy, but I think the air here is richer in oxygen than home.
Yeah.
Oh, my leg.
Now just sit still. I'll find something to set it with.
You see? What did I tell you? The odds were in our favor. We made it. We're still alive.
So far, so good. But what we really need is water.
Yeah. There might be some sort of underground well.
Harry?
Yes?
Listen.
To what?
Can't you hear it?
All I hear is a rumble in my ears. A pounding in my head.
That noise. What's that rumbling? It's coming this way.
Wait.
Yeah. Yes.
I think I hear something.
An earthquake.
No. It's something. Something familiar. Something. Wait a minute. That's a mechanical sound. A motor. Not just one, though. Two, three, maybe more. A motor? What am I saying? Who built the motor?
There's your answer.
Vehicles. Motorized vehicles. That's impossible.
Why? Why is it impossible?
Because it takes intelligent life to build mechanical devices. There's no camouflage. We're exposed on all sides. We don't even have our guns.
Perry, what makes you think this is going to be some kind of massacre? They might be aliens, but they're obviously highly intelligent. Or they wouldn't be driving those trucks or whatever they are.
They could have two heads, you know that. They could have two heads. Would you listen to me? I'm babbling like an idiot. It's just my leg. I'm so dizzy. I can't think straight.
They're not close enough to see. Wait.
What kind of monsters are they?
Look at their faces. They're moving closer.
I can't see.
Good Lord. Look at their faces.
I can't focus, Ray. What do you see?
Look at their faces.
In the name of heaven, Ray. Tell me what you see.
Creates an ugliness all its own. In the backwaters of our minds, lurking in the dark recesses of our subconscious, are the shadowy creatures that nightmares are made of. But what substance do the monsters of our dreams have in reality? Are they manufactured from fairy tales and horror stories of our childhood? Or is there really an ugliness beyond our wildest fantasies waiting for us somewhere out there? Or maybe just as far away as Act Two?
It is just as far away as Act Two, and we will return to CBS Radio Mystery Theater in just a little bit.
Yeah, you know, it's amazing. They know right where to stop that story, don't they?
Oh, man.
Yep. Yes, they
do. They're building up suspense. They're telling us an interesting tale. It's definitely some good science fiction, and this guy's in for it.
just, whether it's a classic type of story finish that will be or a surprise ending, whatever it is, the fact is it's done so well and so well acted. You know, because all of these people that they get are people who are busy spending time on Broadway. If they did television, they were doing soap operas, that kind of thing. Because as far as I know, the few soap operas that are still left, they're still done out of New York. And I think, what was it, Days of Our Lives, we just signed on for a historic, something like 43rd year, something like that.
Good heavens.
Just absolutely, but those are the actors that you're getting. You're not getting, that was the difference between like the Mutual Radio Theater and, or not the Mutual Radio, yeah, the Elliot Lewis program. That was Mutual. Elliot Lewis producing the Sears and the Mutual. And then he also did the Zero Hour, which was hosted by Rod Serling. Those were all West Coast actors. Those are all people you saw on television, that you saw in movies. These are all the people that you might not have been familiar with, except if you were an old radio fan, because a lot of the old radio fans didn't want to leave New York. They found, let's face it, there's a lot of acting on stage and on Broadway and off Broadway and little places here and there. A lot of commercial, your big advertising agencies are there in New York. And so they did the commercials, they did the plays, what television is there now? It's kind of had a resurgence with your talk shows. Several of those returning to New York, like The Daily Show was done in New York. The Late Show with Colbert is on New York. I think even the James Colbert, the one that does the car karaoke. I think he's out of the show was out of New York as well. So there's a lot of New York seems to be able to find enough to keep itself to be the great theater district that it is, the greatest theater district in the world.
Always has been, always will be.
Yep. And you know who has the second greatest theater district in the country?
Cleveland, Ohio, of course.
That's right. Cleveland, Ohio. Only because we had this great row of theaters that they have saved. They were close to being torn down, but they were saved, restored. And so we have, what, about four or five theaters right next to each other. Boom, 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 boom. And they all keep busy. They all keep things coming in and bringing patrons in. So it is from live music to some movies, but mostly plays, whether it be touring Broadway or just like every winter they do a live version of A Christmas Story play, the same as the movie. So
yeah, that place is always hopping down there and messing with my parking. But that's indicative of a successful operation, though, if they're consistently giving
True.
Me pains in the ass. They're doing their thing, you know?
That's right. I know of Al. He has season tickets, two season tickets. And along with that, you pretty much have to buy a parking pass or you're SOL. You may be blocks and blocks and blocks and blocks away if you can find it then, a parking spot then.
Yep. It's always been popular. I've haven't been to a play in a long time. I'm overdue. But every time I go, very memorable. And very elegant. You know, the decorations and the theater itself, the way it's designed, it's very, very, very nice. Come
mm-hmm.
down to Cleveland and visit.
I have been to only one play there. That was a lot of years. It was before my wife here. I think it was even before my ex-wife. It was the Broadway touring company of Annie. And it was just absolutely amazing. Being the touring company, it was just absolutely fascinating watching. They left the lights on and made the scene changes part of the show. It was just absolutely astounding how they did that.
I remember the last thing I saw was Nonsense. Remember that musical, Nonsense?
Yes, that was the Whoopi Goldberg in the movie. Yeah. Wasn't it?
No. She was in a different a nun role in a movie. This was just a musical called Nonsense. And I remember in the very elegant waiting area to get in, there were these nuns waiting to go to see it, you know? And this was quite a while ago when they were still wearing habits and things like that.
Right.
And some kid goes, "Wow, are you in the play?" And then that goes, "Knock it off, kid." And I
got a
or no,
got
she,
a rule
they
up.
Said, "Are you a real nun?" And she goes, "Knock it off, kid." I go, "Oh, so you mean yes?"
When I think of nuns in the movies, I think of Robbie Coltrane and Eric Idle in Nuns on the Run.
There you go.
Talk about out of this world. Yeah. Big old Robbie Coltrane in a nun habit. Yeah. Wow.
Yes. And he did it justice. But we do have a little bit more of our radio show tonight. Let's pick up on part two of Stranded from the CBS Radio Mystery Theater.
Can life exist on other worlds? To be specific, can intelligent beings exist in places so far away they are merely points of light in the midnight sky? And if so, what will they look like? Might they be green-skinned, two-headed creatures,
Or perhaps monsters so hideous that, like the Medusa in ancient legend, the very sight of them would turn a man to stone. On the other hand, might such alien beings not be so very frightful to look at after all? Our two astronauts, who have just crash-landed on the unexplored planet, are about to find out.
What do you see, Ray?
Their faces.
I still can't...
They're coming closer. Can you see it now?
Yes. But it's impossible.
Impossible?
They can't be.
They look... like us.
Exactly like us. But they're aliens.
No. We're the aliens.
Out of a million planets and a million star systems, how can such a coincidence happen?
It can't be coincidence. It has to be something more.
They're surrounding us, getting into some kind of ring.
What is it?
Don't you recognize a military formation? They are soldiers.
What do they intend to do?
The one with all the insignia. He must be the ranking officer.
Yes. You there, the leader. We come in peace.
Ray, no.
He's coming toward us.
Don't make any sudden moves.
They're taking aim.
No. Don't move.
But they've got to understand that we don't mean them any harm.
Ray, keep your hands at your sides.
We've got to communicate with them.
Can't you see? Just as frightened as we are.
They're going to kill us.
No. Look at them. I think what we have here is an old-fashioned standoff.
Ah. Oh. So, what now?
Hold on to my arm. I can't seem to stand up without help. Oh, pain is shooting up my spine.
What is it, Terry?
The sun. It's so bright.
Why are you...
It's getting so hot.
Terry!
I seem to hear my eyes. Oh,
Terry, what is wrong?
The pain.
You've got to stay awake.
I've got to hold on. I've got to keep my eyes open.
Look, they're moving closer.
They're too civilized to kill. Must get them.
Terry, they're closing in on us.
Nothing black on that now.
Terry! Oh. Terry, wake up! I can't face them alone. Whoever... whatever you are, stay away. Don't kill us.
Who are you?
So you are awake at last.
You understand me?
Yes.
But how can you...
I am a doctor of languages. For the past 2 weeks, I have been intensely studying the common sounds and symbols which your words have.
2 weeks? I've been unconscious for 2 weeks?
The sleeping injection to ease the pain of your injury was most effective. Your leg has been set by surgeons.
Wait a minute. Hold on. What do you mean, surgeons? Am I home?
The tissue should mend quite effectively.
No, I can't be home. I remember now. Raymond... where's Raymond?
Your companion, the Major.
Where is he?
I assure you, he is quite well.
But where is he?
The Major has explained to us about your scientific mission.
Look, whatever your name is, what...
I am called Dr. Rea, and you are Colonel Perry.
Wait a minute. This is all a dream, isn't it? I'm in some padded white room on some alien planet talking to some female who looks for all the world like...
like? What?
I haven't seen a female in over 3 years. Of course, this is a dream.
I assure you, Colonel, you are quite conscious.
Except for your hair. I've never seen hair that color before. What kind of chemical pigment do you treat it with?
This is its natural state.
Sure. That's what they all say. I'm not dreaming, then. This is all real. This is happening. All right. Who and what are you?
As I have previously stated, my name is Dr. Rea. I am a linguist.
You are an alien.
This word, alien. The Major has also repeatedly used such a word. In this case, however, the term is inaccurate. You are the aliens.
Okay. We are the aliens. So how can you look like we do?
We have asked the same question. How can you look like us?
I hope you've had better luck answering it than I have.
The greatest scientists in the land are even now working night and day to discover the answer. First, we
must... If you were a doctor, why do you sound like a nurse?
I was about to explain that this experience is quite new to us.
It's new to me, too.
When your spacecraft first appeared on our radar screens, there was much fear.
You mean you tracked our ship?
So did our enemies.
What enemies?
There was a worldwide war alert. An object was descending into the atmosphere at high speed. No one could believe that the object, your ship, was actually what it appeared to be. A vehicle approaching from outer space. One enemy accused
Look,
another.
I'm not interested in your petty squabble.
Even now, the situation on the planet grows tense. Only the highest powers in each nation are aware of your existence.
What are you talking about?
There could be great panic in the world if it was known we had been invaded.
Invaded? Wait, you think that we...
Literally, Colonel Perry. The term is correct. You will excuse me, I must go now and make my report.
Wait a minute. Why am I strapped into this bed?
It is a necessary precaution.
A precaution against what?
Believe me, it is all rather embarrassing.
I asked you a question.
I must go now.
Answer me! Doctor! Ray? Is that really you? Oh, I've never been so glad to see anybody in my entire life. Ray?
I kept asking them to let me see you. They wouldn't. I thought you were dead.
Ray, what's going on out there?
Out where?
Outside this padded cell without windows. What kind of people are they? Have you talked to anybody in charge?
In charge?
The only one I've seen so far is that female, the doctor. Ray, it's been a month since we crashed. In that time, they've kept me in this little cubicle. I want someone to tell me what's going on.
They don't know what to do with us.
They?
The aliens. I mean, the people who are holding us. You see, where we landed, it wasn't just any place.
I don't understand.
The first few weeks when I was learning about them, I found out that they're still behind us in certain ways. They're still divided into countries of power. And where we landed was in a special place. A secret place in one of those countries.
A secret place?
A kind of war base. A weapons installation.
Are you serious?
I'm not sure what kind of weapon. But from the nature of what I've been able to figure out so far, it's probably nuclear.
Nuclear? Is that possible?
Theoretically, anything's possible.
How advanced do you think they are?
I really haven't given it much thought. We have to make plans for our escape, Barry.
You're talking like this is some sort of prison.
It is a prison.
It's a planet. And we're stuck here whether we like it or not.
I don't like it.
Nobody's asking you to like it. There's nothing we can do about it. Besides, you're the award-winning scientist. Now, here's the opportunity most men dream of. This world, so much like our own. Did it evolve separately from us? Or perhaps an earlier civilization?
Oh, who cares about that now?
But, Raymond, why else did they send us into space? And why else did you go?
I'm sorry I ever went. Anyway, do you think that's what we are to them? Scientists? Explorers of the unknown? No. I'll tell you what we are. We're invaders. Creatures from outer space. And I'll tell you what else we are. Laboratory specimens.
Oh, come on, Ray.
You think I'm overreacting? I'm a scientist, remember? If a couple of aliens landed on our world, how would we behave? Would we treat them any differently than they've treated us?
I don't know.
Oh, yes, you do. First thing we'd do is keep them in isolation. Then we'd get the best scientists on the planet to study them the way they're studying us.
Studying us?
Oh, those tiny little spaces in the ceiling, they're miniature cameras. Every sound we make, every move is watched, observed. Cataloged. That's all we are. laboratory animals.
Well, surely they realize how advanced we are.
And that's all we'll ever be. Stuck in little cages for the rest of our lives.
Even if what you say is true, there isn't much we can do about it.
We can escape.
You keep using that word.
We have to escape.
Escape. Escape.
Where?
And how am I to face the odds of man's bedevilment and God? I, a stranger and afraid, in a world I never made. Great words from Mr. Houseman. And what better way to leave us hanging as the fate of our two travelers is temporarily suspended until, of course, we return to face the odds in Act 3.
Which will be coming up shortly.
Shortly. Think of the dilemma there. You have to escape. You don't know where you're at. You've never been there before. You don't know where to go if you can escape. I would think it would almost feel hopeless in a sense.
There's the thrill here because, yeah, I mean, what are you supposed to do? Where are you supposed to go? You have no idea.
And knowing and realizing that you are nothing but a piece of scientific experiment at this point. And what will they do? How will they do it? And when do they start removing organs to look and compare to what you may have?
Or worse yet, probing the seventh planet. It's horrible. we know for some reason aliens like to do that. We don't know why. But
well, aliens. Even when, you know, even when you look at, you know, these, they're far-fetched or, you know, probably fake, but these alien autopsies, what do they do when they get somebody? First, whenever we get something that we don't know about, we fear it. Then we try to kill it because we don't know about it. And then we dissect it. You know, that's what we do. Why would that be any different on that other planet?
That's what they're fearing. And there's where the suspense of this particular episode lies. And it's a good one.
Yeah, it's been interesting. Just a little plot they've had getting to there, to the lifeboat, to barely making to crashing on this planet and being rescued / taken prisoner. And now, it is a prisoner's duty to escape, is it not?
It is. But has the doctor really said anything threatening? I don't think she has.
But the doctor, she's just a doctor of languages, remember?
Yes.
She is only a doctor of languages. So, you know, she's not going to be threatening anything. If she's studying anything, it's her words and use of the words. She said, you know, that word alien, you're using it wrong because here you're the alien. You know?
Yep. That is something they need to remember because they are definitely not on the coming from a position of strength, let us say, in their current situation.
You know, I guess the one thing you could say is if you do escape, if you can figure out how to survive, the fact is you are so much anatomically like the beings on that planet that you could hide amongst them.
Ooh, there's a thought.
But that doesn't tell you how you're going to eat and survive, you know, survive that way. So.
Yeah. Quite the dilemma. Not one I wish to be in.
Nope. I like it right here. It's like somebody asked me if I want tickets for the Browns. And I always say, hey, there's a better seat in my living room than I have there at the stadium. So,
weather is always perfect.
Yep, and I can always watch them lose from my TV in a whole lot more comfort zone.
Yes, I don't have to bother the people around me with my colorful metaphors.
Yeah.
From the disappointment, which is guaranteed to ensue.
Yep, absolutely. But yeah,
from
so much
activity.
It's been really kind of neat. We've not been science fiction for a while, so it's really kind of fun that, you know, we have science fiction tonight, and then in 2 weeks we'll return with more science fiction. We'll get into that more later, but and some suspense coming next week. I don't mean suspense radio. I'm talking about suspenseful tales being told on the radio. So,
but we'll by the master himself, yes, and we'll get into that, as Dave mentioned, when we return after part three and the exciting conclusion of Stranded on CBS Radio Mystery Theater.
So far, we've presented a tale of two stranded astronauts forced to spend the rest of their lives on a strange, distant world. You might very well declare that here is just an updated version of Robinson Crusoe. Instead of the loneliness of a desert island, Colonel Perry and Major Raymond face the bitter isolation of four walls. And instead of an ocean to separate them from civilization, there lies the infinity of space. And something else, too. Mysterious jailers, the inhabitants of this alien planet, who, with one exception, have chosen to remain hidden from view. Although, perhaps in the name of fair play, it is time we examined their side of the story.
Can we have a little order here?
General, what do you intend to do with the aliens?
Mr. Secretary, one question at a time.
Aliens, the whole thing's a hoax, and you know it.
Gentlemen, please. You'll all have a chance to say what you've come here to say. We have before us a most delicate situation. After 1 month of intensive examination, our findings prove quite conclusive. These two men most definitely are from another world. Would you present your findings, Professor Ulto?
The two creatures come from a planet in the next star system, approximately 5 light-years away. The velocity required for such a lengthy voyage indicates a technology far exceeding our own. These are highly intelligent beings.
But how do we know the whole thing isn't an elaborate fake?
A fake? The intricate workings of their spacecraft. The materials of their clothes unlike anything we've ever come across. No, I assure you, this is not a fake.
Thank you, Professor. Gentlemen, we are faced with a dilemma. If the existence of these creatures were to become common knowledge, worldwide hysteria could result. The question I put to you is, can we afford a mass panic? Come in. Doctor, how are you?
General, I must speak to you.
Have I told you what an incredible job you've done with those aliens?
Thank you.
Deciphering that mysterious alphabet of theirs, unlocking their strange language.
Yes, well...
Genius. Sheer genius is what it is. Don't think you won't be rewarded for your efforts.
General, this is very important. I have heard a rather disturbing rumor.
This is a top secret installation. There aren't supposed to be any kind of rumors.
Is it true you plan to keep the existence of these two aliens a complete mystery?
Doctor, don't put me in this position.
I can understand the rationale. The world isn't ready for such a revelation. But how long do you intend to keep them down here?
Creatures that look like us? How can we let them loose on the planet? It's one thing if they were monsters or just different. But these aliens could blend right in with the population. We would never be able to identify them.
Then what you're saying is they will remain here? Underground? Permanently?
Is it better to have mass panic? People suspecting each other of being aliens?
General, I must know.
If you must know anything else, do me a favor and ask Professor Ulto.
Professor Ulto, what does he have to do?
Why don't you go ask him, Doctor?
Ah, Miss Rhea. Always such a pleasure to see your pretty face.
Yes, Professor Ulto. It concerns the two aliens.
The aliens, Miss Rhea?
It's doctor, Reyes.
Of course. Forgive me, but you are so young for such an achievement. I naturally forget.
About the aliens.
Yes, doctor.
Is it true?
Is what true?
Don't fence with me. You know what I'm talking about.
Doctor, you really must learn to control your sharp tongue.
Did the Security Committee grant you a free hand with the aliens?
What if they did?
What do you intend to do with them?
Why such a personal interest?
I have been in on this thing since the beginning. I was the first person to communicate with them. I learned their language.
Doctor?
No.
Of course. You feel slighted, overlooked.
It's just... I've heard stories, Professor.
Story?
About experiments you conduct when you can get volunteers.
And you object to these experiments?
Then the stories are true.
What if they are?
But it's barbaric.
Probing the mysteries of life is not barbaric.
Is that what you intend to do with my two aliens?
Your two aliens.
We have been gifted by the visit of a shining new culture. The treasure of a new language, a magnificent language.
I really don't see the point in becoming hysterical. Certainly not over a couple of creatures.
But you're talking about them as if they were animals.
They are animals.
They're intelligent beings. They deserve to be treated with dignity, even respect.
If I became sentimental over every creature I dissected...
Dissected? You're out of your mind. There's only one word for what you intend to do.
And what is that?
Murder. Plain and simple murder. This is the evidence I spoke of, General.
Evidence? What are you talking about?
These documents here, which I will ask you to circulate, which will prove this entire alien business was simply a hoax.
Yes, that's what I thought you said. But
we both know that these two aliens are genuine. But what good does it do either of us?
I don't understand.
By some incredible twist of fate or coincidence of evolution, they look like human beings. But you and I, General, know that they are from another world. We know they truly are aliens, don't we?
Yes. The spaceship and their clothing proved it.
But we must change that. We must agree on what the facts really were and what the facts are going to become.
I have absolutely no idea what you're getting at, Doctor.
Then listen to me. These are the new facts. You are going to release a statement that what crashed in the desert was some kind of manned probe. Experimental, of course. Belonging to another department.
Well, what other department?
Oh, who cares? You make one up. There are so many secret projects these days. Who can keep track?
You're suggesting that we fabricate some lie?
Yes. We cannot afford to let the world find out the truth. You heard them all at the security meeting. They want to believe it was a hoax. Well, make it easy on yourself. Let it be a hoax.
Of all the ridiculous...
Admit it, General, isn't that how you'd like to see the problem resolved? As a hoax?
But even if I did, there's still no way.
There are many ways. The first is to destroy what's left of their clothing and spaceship, the only proof that the two of them are aliens. And then we must substitute proof that they are human.
They are not human.
Agreed. But with a couple of false birth certificates and other necessary identification papers, quite simple to produce, who is going to know different?
You make it sound very simple.
Give me a year, General, and some of our best personnel. We could teach the aliens our ways, our customs.
What if these creatures don't want to cooperate?
But they want to survive, don't they? For all intents and purposes, this is their home now. They'll have to learn to live in it.
I don't know. I just don't know.
By the way, General, there are several people who would prefer to take care of the situation my way.
What people?
The right people. The people you, for example, depend upon for your next promotion.
What are you saying?
I'm saying, General, that I have connections.
Uh-huh. Well, go on.
There is an isolated spot in the west by the sea. It's peaceful, beautiful, secure, but not a prison underground like here. It would be the perfect place to take them, to re-educate them.
Why?
Why what, sir?
Why are you doing this?
I thought that was obvious, General. I want them to live.
Raymond, yesterday you came to see me. Today I'm visiting you. I've learned how to move on these crutches. Something crazy is going on here. No one is guarding us anymore. Someone unstrapped my bed, left the door unlocked, and a pair of crutches by... Ray, what's the matter with you?
You know what this place is? A great big laboratory.
We could have died out there in space.
We'd have been better off.
Instead, we survive a crash landing on an unknown planet. Against all odds, it's a planet within the range of our lifestyle, a planet with an oxygen atmosphere, with...
Yes, it would have been better to die in space.
It's never better to die when you can live. Ray, you've got to pull yourself together.
I call it a living death.
No, no, I call it surviving.
Well, if it isn't the good doctor...
You will both please change into these garments.
Why? What's going on?
Once clothed in these work uniforms, you could pass for a couple of technicians. Here are your identification badges.
Wait a minute. What are you up
Quickly,
to?
Quickly. There's not much time.
Time for what?
For your escape, of course.
Escape?
They've staged a safety drill and cleared the halls for 30 minutes. That will give us just enough time to make it up to level one.
And what, may I ask, is waiting for us at level one?
Transportation out of here.
To where?
Do you trust me, Colonel?
Why should I trust anybody on this planet?
Because you need a friend.
Doctor, why the sudden change? Why are you doing this?
Because, like you, I am an explorer.
Escape? That's a joke. Escape where?
Major Raymond, there's a whole world outside.
But it's the wrong world.
Gentlemen, you can come willingly or not at all.
Raymond.
It's the wrong world.
Raymond. It's the only world we've got now. Is your planet all like this?
A desert? No. When we head northwest, you'll be able to see the ocean. I'm glad you decided to come with us, Major Raymond. Very glad.
Did I have a choice?
Perhaps someday you might even learn to call our planet home.
No, Doctor. Home is a billion miles away.
And what about you, Colonel?
I don't really know. You say this vehicle is headed in the direction of the ocean?
Yes.
Tell me more about an ocean.
There is water as far as the eye can see.
Is such a thing possible?
In fact, water makes up 3/4 of our world.
3/4? Why, that's fantastic.
It's impossible, Perry.
I assure you it is quite possible, Major. There are many amazing things we can see, if you will let us show them to you.
Yes. This is a most amazing planet. What do you call it, Doctor?
I call it home. And one day you will also. For the meantime, Colonel, you can just call it Earth.
Earth, the third planet from a tiny yellow star, perched near the edge of a somewhat insignificant galaxy, swallowed up in an infinity of galaxies, in an endless universe. Yet, for all our unimportance, who knows how brightly the light of our little world might shine in some distant night sky, billions of light years away. I'll be back shortly.
How wise was Lord Tennyson? Surely a man before his time. I am part of all that I have met, he wrote. Yet all experience is an arch where through gleams that untraveled world. And that is what we do here. Present archways to untraveled worlds. Worlds not only light years away, but yesterdays away. Worlds of tomorrow. And then again, worlds not far beyond our backyard. It all depends on where one's interests lie. Our cast included Marion Seldes, Gordon Gould, and Bernie Grant. The entire production was under the direction of Hyman Brown. This is E.G. Marshall, inviting you to return to our Mystery Theater for another adventure in the macabre. Until next time, pleasant dreams.
News Radio 78, WBBM, Chicago.
The family that flies together.
Ready when you are.
Saves together.
Ready when you are.
It's Delta's family fling fare. Dad pays the regular one-way tourist fare. Then Mom and up to three kids, 2 through 17, pay only $49 each. On arrival, show your family fling ticket at Marriott Hotels, and a family of up to five staying together gets the single room rate. At Hertz Car Rental, get one day free when you pay for three, or get a family-sized car at a compact rate, plus a $20 bonus coupon. Family fling is good only in June, and only on nonstops to Dallas-Fort Worth and on certain departures for Austin and San Antonio. Not valid via Atlanta. Fly together, save together, but make reservations early.
Okay, then. Thank you, Delta.
WBBM Chicago, that was also would become home later on of Chuck Shaden. You know, so many times I bring in some interviews with Chuck Shaden or talking about him. He was a guy that loved old radio so much that he brought it back to Chicago. He did it there. I think in the evenings, then on weekends, he had another station, FM station, where we'd go on for a couple, 3 hours a night interviewing people who would come through Chicago. Les Tremaine, he had Hyman Brown up there, and so many, anybody that traveled through there, he would also go out to California and talk to these great actors who had been in the old radio dramas and such. But that was kind of his home base, was WBBM Chicago. And thank goodness my brother lived there for a while and got me informed on who Chuck Shaden is and all that he has done to help preserve old time radio. He even had a shop called MGM Metro Goldwyn Memories. He was the owner of the shop, and it was radio shows, radio memorabilia, and movie memorabilia. That's what the whole shop was about. Ooh. And it wasn't that far from good old Wrigley Field. So
that would be a cool place to visit.
I have been. I'm not sure whether I know he's essentially retired from radio and retired from the Nostalgia Digest, which he started. And I think he's still with us, but I just think he's pretty much up there himself in age. It is pretty much a out of the picture, but.
Yeah.
What an impact he had on so many Chicagoans who loved the old-time radio.
As we do here.
And don't forget, for the longest time, Chicago was the second largest city in New York in the country, outside of New York being the first. And technically, although Houston is gaining quickly, it is still the third largest city in New York. It's New York, Los Angeles, and Chicago. Those are the three largest cities. So So much great radio came from Chicago. A lot of the great dramas did emanate from there, and then did moved out to kind of east and west. But you know, Fibber McGee and Molly and so many of those wonderful shows actually started right there in Chicago.
Pretty amazing, and I think that was another cool thing about radio is it allowed for some of these smaller or mid-market towns to have their own productions. You know, shows came out of Detroit, shows came out of Chicago, shows came out of other smaller towns across the nation.
Yep. So it's and everybody digging in to bring up their memories and share them. I mean, so many wonderful interviews. I mean, I remember we heard most of an Arch Obler interview that he did. Went out to California and was talking with Arch Obler. And I know Jim Bowles and two of the guys from I Love a Mystery, but they were just such in a big part of old-time radio. And Hyman Brown, when he came to Chicago to be honored with the radio Broadcasters Hall of Fame, and as a fundraiser reenacted that Radio Mystery Theater that I went to Chicago to see. So
nice.
Just and I've been to their museum there. It's a really neat. They have Fibber McGee's Closet that was of course that was on radio, but they have that there, and it was dedicated by none other than Jim Jordan's son, Fibber McGee's son. It was there to dedicate Fibber McGee's Closet. So there's, you know, just so many neat little stories, even just of that happened right around there. That was in the 90s, you know, 1990s.
Way long time ago.
Yeah.
It is a way long time ago now.
It is. Yeah.
And now I'm depressed. So in order to cheer myself up, it's time to turn back the hands of time. A while ago, we did a show on Cleveland and all the wonderful things here, and it's been a fine market for the stuff we grew up with, but we thought we'd share some more Cleveland memories, some old Cleveland radio commercials.
Are your Mondays moody days? Your Tuesdays too much days? Then take what a number of people recommend. An evening at Swingo's new Keg and Quarter Lounge. A very special place for very special people at 18th and Euclid. Take in the new lounge for all that ails you from the travails of a tough day at the office. A tidy beverage. Some great atmosphere. The company of someone you didn't know 10 minutes ago. Plus lively entertainment nightly in the all-new Keg and Quarter Lounge. It's a great new lounge, bursting with an anything-can-happen atmosphere. Weeknights and weekends, the snapshots appear nightly, preceded by Tom Clare at the piano with sweet music from 5 to 8 p.m. A great spot, a fantastic spot, and just the place to head off your weekday blahs. Find out for yourself. Take just one night and see at Swingo's Keg and Quarter Lounge, 18th and Euclid, with parking off 18th Street between Euclid and Prospect.
This is the story of a tank truck express they call the Big O. She hauls Lawson's fresh squeezed orange juice nonstop from Florida. Roll on, Big O. Get that juice up to Lawson's in 40 hours. Now the oranges ripen in the Florida sun. Sweet on the tree they stay. Then they pick them and they squeeze just as quick as you please. And the Big O leaves the same day. Roll on, Big O. Get that juice up to Lawson's in 40 hours. Now one man sleeps while the other man drives on the nonstop Lawson run. And the cold, cold juice in the tank truck caboose stays as fresh as the Florida sun. Roll on, Big O. Get that juice up to Lawson's in 40 hours. Get that juice up to Lawson's in 40 hours.
Yeah.
shopping center that grew up to be a city. Southgate, USA. Four giant department stores and 120 other stores. Even two nightclubs and a motor hotel. Eight automotive stores, six banks, and two pet shops. You can hire a decorator for your home or a gardener for your yard. You can shop for food at six different stores. Or learn to play the tuba.
Southgate was the first shopping center I remember going to by myself, getting on the bus. That was located in Maple Heights, Ohio. I grew up in an area called Bedford.
Oh, okay. Maple Heights.
East suburb
okay,
of Cleveland. But
yeah.
You didn't know that, huh?
I didn't know that was the first place you got to roam around unrestricted, no.
So then you would say you learned something.
I did learn something. Is there anything else I could possibly learn?
Somewhat belatedly, Erie House Radio proudly presents a garrulous moral of the story. I can't do it like you do, Dave. With apologies to Gar. There's no place like home.
There we go.
Yeah, someone ought to charge me a lot for that crummy joke.
looking back there at that, a couple things come to mind. That Cleveland memories grenade there. The Swingos, the Jim Swingos, which actually was one of the hippest places in downtown Cleveland. It was kind of a nightclub lounge type place. They was connected to a hotel down there, and
yep.
it was just the place to be there in
Swanky.
The,
it was swanky.
Yeah. Oh yeah, and definitely it had that 70s deco type look. Because I've seen not long ago they had a feature in it about Swingos and that in the paper. That was just kind of a neat reminder of that. And the other thing go ahead.
I had to have Mrs. K listen to that because she used to like to go to Swingos back in the day.
Ah, there you go. And then the other thing I thought about was the Big O. Now, of course, we didn't really know that much about the Big O, but we did know about Lawson's, which was a dairy convenient market that was all over, not only just Ohio, but into Pennsylvania and parts of New York, I think, as well. I don't think as far as, of course, where Fogg's was eventually sold out to Dairy Mart. And then sold out to the Dairy Mart was sold out to the Circle K, but fear not, Bunky. Lawson's still survives in two ways. One, at Circle K, at least in this area, because Circle K is a Canadian-owned chain, but at least here in Northeast Ohio, we can still get that original Lawson's chip dip right there in there, in the Circle K, and also. Lawson's is still alive and well in Japan. And
yes.
I've seen pictures of it also in Hawaii.
What?
Yep. So.
What?
Yep.
I had no idea. I wonder what islands, because I've been to Maui and I don't remember a Lawson's. I would have liked to be hanging out there.
I remember Lawson's was in your regular neighborhoods.
Yeah.
They weren't big out in the place. They were your regular neighborhood place. I remember used to going there with my grandfather. He would take his half-gallon glass jugs of milk to return,
mm-hmm.
and then he would get his deposit back from that, and he had a blue carrier that he put two other half-gallon containers in to head home with. And so...
Well, I you remember those bottles, those Lawson's milk bottles, were shaped just like their emblem.
Yes, yes. And I do have a couple of them. Matter of fact, if I turn around behind me.
I no longer have a Lawson's milk bottle.
I do have a couple of the half gallons, or maybe just one up there. But I have my top hat on top of my Lawson's milk jug. Not jug, the bottle. Yeah. But it was a big part of growing up in Ohio, because my grandfather was from Western Ohio, and when we came back to Northeastern, of course. It was headquartered right here in Cuyahoga Falls, probably about 6 miles from where I'm sitting right now.
Probably north of you, I'm thinking.
Yes, yes, just slightly north.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And folks listening, it was such a thrill to go there as a kid because they had the little toys hanging there. And this was like a new thing. This was not... You know, you didn't have convenience stores all over the place. Sometimes you had to drive a little bit to get to Lawson's. But it was good. It really was the prototype convenience store chain.
Yes. And what grocery stores would become, gas stations would become, because the markup at a convenience store is only convenient for the owner. not the buyer, but you're right.
Boy.
You could buy your baseball cards or your candies or candy bars or all those things. You could buy that at Lawson's, as well as your milks and your meats. They had a deli.
Yep.
Another big deli in this area was Isley's, and although Isley's is long gone, you could still buy the Isley's chip chopped ham. In several places, including our Giant Eagles, they carry the Isley's chip chopped hams. And
Lawson's was known for that too. They always, I remember our family always ran for chip chopped ham because it was cheap. It was cheap.
And I will.
But it was good.
I will tell you. There was a time when Lawson's were converting to Dairy Mart. I actually spent a bit of a time being a store manager for Lawson's, as they became Dairy Marts, chain had bought them already, but they were still in the conversion process. And I'll tell you something: I wish I had it, and it is probably lost forever. One of the training sessions I went to, they played a training film about how not to mess up too much coffee and how to do things in safety and things like that. You'll never guess who produced and made that safety film, Dale. You will never get it.
Dave Binkley.
No. How about Big Chuck and Little John?
Ah, that would have been my second guess.
Yes, and I tell you what, I'd die. Of course, since there is no Dairy Mart anymore, how could I ever even ask to find out where that would be? I mean, I know Chuck and John, what a hoot they would get out of seeing that again.
Oh, my gosh, yeah.
Because that was the thing when Chuck did that, he was on to the next thing. You know, he was busy making commercials. He was busy directing the news, directing specials. He directed a lot of the local Emmy Award presentations that were aired. He directed a couple of feature movies. So at the same time, he was doing a weekly TV show where he was also writing and doing all these sketches, as well as writing the show and putting it all together. So what an amazing body of work, Chuck Schadowsky.
Yeah, that's the part most people don't know. We have had the benefit of reading Big Chuck's book, 40 Years on Cleveland Television.
Yeah.
Amazing career.
And it also gives you such a great... I was just going to say, it also gives you such a great insight in what television was like in Cleveland in the 1960s.
Yeah. Yeah, and beyond, throughout his career and how it changed. But it's a good read, too. Folks, you should try it. We have a little bit of time left. I think we should throw a dime into the music jukebox.
Okay. I don't get paid till next week, but you know what? I still have a dime left. I will hand this to you for you to put it into that jukebox, Dale.
All right. In it goes.
Well, that's the signal to Fallout Men to rally around the ancient jukebox, because we're coming at you with another cheerful careful of hep ditties. So lean back and latch on to this first platter. Are you ready? That's good, because the name of the tune is Are You Ready? It's by Lucky Millinder. Trevor Bacon does the vocal.
Tunes, whether they be sorrowful about missing home or missing the guy or missing the gal back home, but also bouncy, wonderful numbers like this. So,
Hey, and Buzz Bain says good night over there, so good night. Real quick, Dave, go ahead.
Okay, we run it out that quick. I was just going to say that there's a new to podcast, not only on Blog Talk Radio, but also if you go to castbox.fm. Plug in Erie House Radio. You'll find us there as well. I'm doing some, adding some shows there all the time. So another way to add, they're clipped down to the 90 and 120, levelized and put up. So that, and what do we got next week, Dale?
You can't escape us. Next week, it's another Erie House Radio drive-in with Alfred Hitchcock. That's right, too. Great Tales. It's a double feature next weekend, Friday and Saturday nights here at Erie House.
Okay. As far as I know, Gar's on tonight after our show, so you might want to head over to iVlog TV to catch our good friend and buddy and cohort, Gar the Ghoul. That's horrible horror starring Gar the Ghoul.
Yes, indeed. Well, thanks again for listening in. We'll see you next time. TTFN.
The castle lights are growing dim. There's no one left but me and him.
And only
when
him.
Next we meet in Frankenstone, don't come alone.
Yeah, unless you want to.
Oh, they missed the candle poof. And,
okay,
and yet the stream says there's 9 seconds to go. Oh, now it's zeroed out. Okay.
Yep, it did do that. Yep.
Really peculiar. Very peculiar.
Well, I just, as far as I know, I understand Blog Talk just doesn't know how to tell time. That's my only understanding of the whole thing. They do not understand how to tell time.
There's your takeaway, kids.
But it is a wonderful vehicle for us to be here and share these great programs with you, and we'll do what we can to. Matter of fact, what I didn't get a chance to say is, if you go to the castbox.fm, put in Area House Radio, you're going to find two. One is Dale K. That's all the original programs with all the extras. And if you look under the Dave Binkley, that'll be the original 90 and the 120-minute ones programs as they were, as you normally got to hear them when the clock shuts off there. And not the excess jabbering. So,
like we're doing now.
Like we're doing now, yes.
Yeah.
But it is interesting because, you know, when we're live, so many of these different clips of everything come with different volumes, and there's no meter to really show us how the volume changes. So that's why it's kind of neat. I also do that for the hour long ones for the blind that we broadcast. It's just a fun little way to help share these programs, and another way to share them, because the more places you have them out there, the more people you're going to be able to share and enlightened with our mission to spread old time radio throughout the world once again.
Yes, like the coronavirus.
Yes, well, hopefully it isn't as dangerous as that. But
no, this is good for you.
Only the jokes are that dangerous.
True. Very true.
Yeah. Oh, so. Interesting.
So
I was just saying, what a fun science fiction weekend there, Dale.
Great, great stories. Anytime you got Bradbury and X-1 on the same night, followed by CBS Radio Mystery Theater, how are you going to lose?
Absolutely. So, and 2 weeks from tonight, back to more science fiction. We haven't had it in a while, and we're giving you a lot here in February.
Seriously, Dave, this you obviously, I think it's clear to everybody that you're the guy who's been picking the shows and creating these themes and stuff, and you have no idea what this is like. The excitement I had as a kid going to either the bookstore down in Bedford or like the corner store and getting my comic books and or monster magazines to see what, you know, thrills were next. And that's what I'm getting here with these stories. And it's the same feeling for me again. I feel like a teen again.
But you got to recall, Dale, for me, being dyslexic and not knowing that I was, I didn't get that much enjoyment out of most of my reading. The thing I could enjoy the most were biographies and autobiographies, because they weren't as difficult to decipher and to understand. These radio shows were my books. They were my short stories. They were my my reading material. And
that was your fiction. Yeah,
it was my fiction. So
yeah,
it was now knowing what I had, it does make things a lot clearer and make it easier for me to understand. I also would have tried harder, knowing what I had to in order to work around it. We all find our ways to cope and to do things.
Yep.
And I know when my son was diagnosed with it as well, He said, well, we can do this. This is no. We're going to learn this. And we're going to work it out. Nobody's going to get him a pass once he gets out of school. You know,
yeah.
he's got to learn to do this. But now that we know what we're dealing with, it gives us a way to work with it. And that's what would have been my thing. And I probably would have been able to enjoy the reading like you did and like Gar did and like so many others were able to.
Gosh, I even remember in basic training I had some paperbacks because, you know, during your downtime there was nothing to do. Stay in your bunk. Well, shit, I'll read, you know.
Okay.
Oops, I said a bad word. But
I didn't hear it.
Oh, good. I said no, like
otherwise. Because if I did,
some were collections of stories from like Weird Tales magazine, Pulp magazine, and other science fiction and fantasy stuff. It was awesome.
Ah, yeah. I was just going to say, if I did hear some bad words, I had to put you on some planetoid.
Yes, but not the seventh planet. I'm not going there.
Well, you know what? If it's bad enough, that's where you have to go. No,
that's where I belong, but that's not where I'm going.
Oh, my.
That may well be where I belong, but that's not where I intend to go. Let's see.
Oh. Hey, and excellent choice putting that in using that dime in that jukebox, Dale. It was a fun little ditty there.
I could listen to that music for a long time. I enjoy big band music, music from that era, and now I'm starting to get an appreciation for some of the really, really early jazz. Good stuff.
Yeah. There's some things like, you know, are you talking about going back to like a Satchmo, things like that, his original recordings?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and the thing is, of course, you and I grew up in the era of Al Hurt and Herb Alpert, and I love them both. A lot of people, you know, chose one or the other.
Mm-hmm.
I like to I hear music. But I like them both because I always felt that Herb Alpert could make a trumpet cry and Al Hurt could make it dance. But the thing is with Satchmo, and he did play it on his recordings, and I never thought it was that great of a trumpet player. But what he did is open the door for so many others and so many trumpet players as well. By the way,
yeah.
I did make one visit to New Orleans, and I learned the story. Do you know how he got the nickname of Satchmo?
No, wow.
What he did is he played his trumpet as a kid in the streets, and people would throw him pennies, nickels, that kind of a thing.
Mm-hmm.
And his pants all had pockets. So he'd pick up the coins and stuff them in his mouth, and they called him, because of that, they thought it was funny, they called him Sack Mouth, and it did eventually evolve into Satchmo. And that's where how he got his nickname of Satchmo.
And he got a dime stuck in his throat because he had a very interesting voice.
He did. And making one of the most beautiful songs, certainly one of the most beautiful songs during the Vietnam War era of What a Wonderful World.
Yeah. You know, I think I can do a fairly good Louis Armstrong, but then my throat hurts for like an hour.
I bet it does. Because you'd have to really strain those vocal cords to do that.
Yeah.
And he did some work for Disney and sang the song for the which sold pretty well of 10 Feet Off the Ground for one of their movies. It was people like Bing Crosby who really pushed his appearances in places where the African Americans never got a chance to perform. They and Mills Brothers broke so many bounds for grounds for so many people by not even realizing that. I mean, because the Mills Brothers, they are guys that just traveled the world and never went for a time without employment. It was just amazing.
Yeah. Oh, they were tremendous. They were very, very good.
And right here from Ohio, I'm telling you.
Of course.
What else can you say? Always favorites of mine. They're the way that they would just would be harmonized to me was just absolutely amazing. And it kind of they could go from a sad song to a really jazzy song. And I know they did a couple songs, especially one called Caravan. They strictly did using their mouths, mimicking instruments, because they weren't most cases they weren't allowed to have actual bands in the studios with them. So they mimicked the trombone and the trumpet, and they had the guitar player, and then they mimicked a bass. So the song was nothing but Caravan. Was nothing that the Mills Brothers did was nothing but them being instruments. So
that is pretty cool.
They made several appearances on just about everybody, but they also did on Dean Martin's show because he was a big fan of theirs. Because when he grew up in Steubenville, they were performing there because they would just travel the country and perform. And of course, Dean Martin was born and raised right there in Steubenville, Ohio.
So, another Ohio boy.
Yep.
Yeah, I think he's buried there, isn't he?
Might be.
I think he is. Yeah.
Well, if you have nothing more, I guess we should head over to I'd like to head over to Gars and support our brethren over there. And
tell them I said hello and break a leg, all that fun good luck Hollywood stuff.
I will do that. And I guess that means it's time to bring on the one, the only, Schnozola.
Good night. Good night. Good night. It's time to say good night. Good night. Good night. What more to say but good night? We've had a few laughs, and it's time for toodaloo. Arrivo, up we the same, and in cut-tink-a-doo. Good night. Good night. Good night, folks. And good night, Mrs. Calabash, wherever.
Down, cat, down.